Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Knocking your teeth loose with the best hockey coverage possible. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome to a Monday edition of Hockey Central at Noon. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard, and the band is back together, playing the roles of Jake and Elwood Blues, our man Gordon Stellick, and Damian Cox back together once again. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Plenty on the plenty of grist for the mill and guests today. Paul Bissonnette of the Manchester Monarchs, the Calder Cup champion. Manchester Monarchs beat the Utica in five games. We'll talk the Comets. We'll talk to him a little bit later
on. I was going
to
say the Utica.
I know. Utica
FC, I think.
And that's the kind of thing Merrick never blanks on.
I know. I don't know what
he always gets.
You know, I'm not fully caffeinated today. I'm not fully caffeinated, Damien. But we hope that our next guest, Bill Daly, will be NHL's deputy commissioner, will be aboard. And plenty to talk about today. Will the Stanley Cup be handed out in Chicago for the first time since 1938 when Bill Stewart piloted things? We'll stand by to find out that answer. But about the weekend, about Saturday, Damien, we are going to get to your mock draft and maybe spend a little bit more time on radio than we did on television with it.
You know what? If it goes that quick on television, you're going to have a problem covering. It's going to be done in like 8 minutes.
It could be wrapped up by 7:30.
Yeah. I remember when I did the 89 mock draft, I said the Leafs will take three players from the Belleville Bulls. People thought I was crazy. People thought that will never happen.
The travel budget extended to Belleville, and afterwards scouts were going to have to go out.
He's getting sour on us already.
Well, there's got to be better jokes than that. But anyway, three from Belleville.
What did you guys make of the Chicago 2-1 victory on Saturday night? Gordon, start with you.
Well, you know it was the every game there's as we talk about the no script, right?
Yeah.
And again, you talk about the lesser lights providing the offense that way.
Hang on. What offense?
Well, I know. Within Chicago, what after three games, their big guns had one goal. So you know, And the whole goaltending thing is kind of thrown me. Like, Ben Bishop, had a brain cramp. You had 2 minutes of microcosm that Corey Crawford screws up, gives the puck up. Mm-hmm. Tampa can score. Now an elite player is injured on that play for Tampa. Then it turns out Corey Crawford played the puck outside the trapezoid and should have had a penalty. I've never hardly seen that called. And then did Ben Bishop not see Victor Hedman? That was weird.
It's hard to miss him.
I know.
He's kind of 6'6".
I know. So Patrick Sharp gets the equivalent of a slam dunk.
Yeah.
And that's really the 2 minutes of the game and maybe the 2 minutes of the series.
I mean, are you guys loving the hockey here?
No.
The hockey's okay. The hockey's not great.
Yeah. I mean, it's the script and the story and the stars and the guts of guys and everything.
By the nature of what the cup final is always going to be dramatic, and every play will be that much more intensified. Is it the most enjoyable one we've seen now?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to somebody last night. They said, you know, you get all these stories about, you know, Duncan, Keith playing these incredible minutes and guys getting hurt and playing through it and, you know, the warrior mentality and all that stuff. What about the hockey? And I think it's such a challenge for these teams. These are two excellent organizations with excellent players, excellent coaching, all kinds of qualities. And we are here in the middle of June after what they've had to go through just to get here. I think it's really hard to have a whole lot left.
And I think the Chicago Blackhawks, and they've won it twice, don't care about the entertainment value.
Right.
They had a real entertaining series against L.A., didn't get to the final. That was one for the ages. So I find in talking to people, maybe the same people you talk to, I don't know, but that they love the playoff hockey, haven't really liked the final as far as entertainment goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe that's not – I mean, last year's
is it
final –
Is just goals for you, Damian?
Well, goals is a part of it. I like offense, and I've always, and I understand that some people love defense. That's okay too. For me, it's goals, but it's also like the Saturday night game. I mean, it was almost as though every team was doing everything right all the time, which meant there were no chances. There were no open opportunities because both teams are so good at all the little things that you have to do. And let's face it, now I've got an NHL where there are no bad skaters in the league, right? There used to be.
Yeah.
There's no bad skaters in the league, so everybody plays on the right side of the puck. There are, you know, 20 years ago, you would have a couple of guys per team who really didn't play much defense. Now, pretty much every guy plays defense. So it has become a real challenge. Plus, you've got gigantic goaltenders. So if it's me and I was looking at the NHL, I would be thinking, and I know the NHLPA is saying, something's got to happen here, guys. We need a little bit more offense. To me, the perfect hockey game is a 4-3 game. I think you need to have a league that averages 7 goals a game. Mm-hmm. That means you're going to have some 1-0 games, you're going to have some 6-1 games, and you're going to have some 4-3 games. But I don't know. I mean, is there enough offense in this for you?
No, I'd like a little bit more.
If I can pause on that, is it about – because I don't necessarily need to see a 4-3 game as long as there are enough opportunities that would lead to a game being 4-3. But if it ends up 2-1 –
Were there the other night for you on Saturday night?
I'm talking about scoring opportunities more than anything else. That's all I really care
about. Were they there for you on Saturday night?
They weren't there on Saturday.
Right. But, you know, I even talk about – it's funny, and first of all, we can talk whether it's expanding the net and all those, because I'm for that, tweaking it a little bit that way. But even game 5 and 7 against the Rangers for Tampa, like, I was impressed how they suffocated the Rangers in Madison Square Garden. So I was impressed, even though it wasn't like 7-5, the way they played. But then it's funny, the Chicago series, when they had the lead, they played more of the rope-a-dope. You know what I mean? It was a little bit different. Then Chicago came back. So it wasn't even like they were able to do it the same way they did against. So I can take low scoring, just like baseball. You can take the odd great 1-0 game or 2-1 game, and, you know, if it's a pitching classic, and the same with hockey.
I'll tell you what, this series, and Saturday night in particular, was a great argument for taking out the trapezoid.
Oh, going away.
Let these goalies handle the puck. Yeah. That'll create some scoring chances.
Well, they were just going at 3 goalies, really. And that's what was put in. Sour grapes, because 90% of the league had a goalie that couldn't handle the puck.
It was the 2 Marty's that could, Turco and Berdur, and that's
basically,
it.
Basically, that was it. And so they decided they would take away that advantage. I agree with you. It's like, it's
I don't know why it's there anymore. The trapezoid.
Trapezoid anymore?
Yeah, I don't know.
I understood it.
They obviously didn't call it the other night.
It was
that's true.
Yeah, they didn't. Come on, that's a tough one. That one in that situation.
I know, but it's
that
a penalty.
That is so tough to call.
I don't think I've ever really seen it once. I mean, once we saw Jonathan Bernier realize. Remember, he couldn't go out
against Carolina.
And kind of, it was like a ticking time bomb. Whatever.
I'll tell you one call that I struggled with in that game, and I continue to struggle with, and I'd like to see them look at it. So JT Miller, a shot comes from the point, hits his stick. Probably breaks his stick. And then Brandon Saad doesn't slash him. He basically just puts his stick on him. Yep. His stick breaks in two. He gets a minor penalty. Mm-hmm.
Now, hang on a second here.
That can't be a penalty.
For philosophical consistency, though, because you love the automatic penalty for the puck over the glass.
I do.
Black and white, done. Yep. This is a penalty.
I know where you're going, and
but
I agree.
You don't want it to come down to an opinion of the official how hard the stick tap.
I would like there at least to
isn't
be.
Isn't that a black and white scenario? Either stick
it is,
open,
and that's how they call it.
Isn't
and broken. That is how they call it. I'd like the official in that situation to be able to say, that's not even close to a slash. I mean, it was not a slash.
I agree.
But it was enough to break his stick. Even though he argues.
Yeah, but his stick, I think his stick was already broken.
He said, I needed an MRI on my stick. Really, basically, if they could take the stick in for an MRI and see what happened. But
now, that didn't create a goal, I don't think, right? So at the end of the day, but.
But then maybe it's incumbent upon you, if you think your stick's broken, to drop it. I don't know, because they do. It is black and white now. Like, you break a stick, and it's kind of an obvious one, and we all say, well.
And then there's the one where a guy will have one hand on his stick.
Oh, I know, and get tapped.
And a player will knock it out of his hand, and they get a penalty. Why is that a penalty? So I understand why they went very hard on this, because they were having broken hands. Guys were getting slashed on the hand. So I get that part of it. Maybe you can change it. But, boy, in that game, I mean, that is not a penalty. What Brandon Saad. That is not a penalty.
I'm with you on that, but I'm also not a fan of the automatic 2 minutes for the puck over the glass.
Well,
I think there are too many variables, specifically end of a period.
No, you can't judge intent. It was in the referee's hands about judging intent, and it got ridiculous about trying to. And I know, and you can see the officials. They hate to call it to make a 2-man disadvantage. You know, in the playoffs especially, but it became a game within a game. And guys were doing it on purpose, and then could plead their case.
Now, how about in the final minute, right? Yeah. Tampa had 8 guys on the ice.
Well, they've been
they have too many men. Go
they've
big.
They've been playing.
Now,
with
I believe
this
that's,
all
that's
long.
Actually no.
They've
they had with this for sorry. A while. They had 8 skaters on the ice. They actually had 9 people on the ice, and I believe, Gord, that is too many men.
It's way too many men.
We're not playing rugby. What's
a double minor for way too many men on the ice. Yeah. Well, it's Well,
but at that juncture of the game, when they're trying to get the goalie out and try to tie the game, I could see how you could have one guy.
The injury early on, I think, put your lines a little bit out of whack. I'm It still shouldn't happen. Wow. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But that's a lot of guys that someone miscommunicated what line was supposed to be on. There was a mix up there.
Now, Steven Stamkos has not scored a goal in this series, correct?
Or Pat Kane.
Right. But they're up 3-2, so nobody talks about that.
Right. You're right. Nobody talks
about that. Do you, in a low scoring series where it's so low, do you say Steve Stamkos is not delivering? Or is it so difficult for anybody to score that it's, you sort of say, well, or, you know, or guys are hot and cold.
Both teams have barely hit double digits in this series for goals. So when you look at Chicago and you look at Tampa, as much as Steven Stamkos is a focal point, no one's really scoring.
And that's where I struggle a little bit, and not to compare the NBA with the NHL because they're so different. But if you turn on the game, you get to see Steph Curry shoot the basketball and get his chances. You get to see LeBron James, you know, do what he does. He'll get his chances. I'm not sure I've seen Steve Stamkos get a shot.
You know, part of that
he is so well checked by the Chicago Blackhawks.
Is the controversy about is John Cooper using Steven Stamkos in the most efficient way in that one-time position? We've seen Tyler Johnson in that spot.
I know. Who apparently can't shoot because he's got a bad hand.
He's got the bad paw, I know. And much to the frustration of Steven Stamkos. I mean, how many times have we seen Stamkos dine out on that one-timer, right-hand shot on the left side? That's his bread and butter. But it hasn't been. Somehow, they've got 91 in the middle of the ice. They're to what? To chip pucks? To play snooker? I don't know.
Well, and you go, I mean, Patrick Kane, there was never, and Glenn Healy was really big on it from the word go, about the ice time, right? So, I mean, one thing, Joel Quenneville, if your name's Taves or Kane, you're going to get ice time and lots of ice time, and he keeps you going. And so,
I think there's a difference between those two guys.
And Stamkos?
Well, in that, Kane's done it. He scored the cup winning goal. He's come through in the playoffs. He's done he scored the big goals.
Steven Stamkos this playoff.
He may, but he has not yet. You know, I'm not saying one player is better than the other, but Patrick Kane, for another while yet, if he were to want, can rest on his record and his
morals. But I was saying that about the Blackhawks.
You give him more the benefit of the doubt than you give Steven Stamkos. His big first hurrah in the Stanley Cup final, and so far, popcorn for goals.
Well, with this series, I was started off saying about the Chicago guys. Like, in Anaheim, it was all of a sudden Jonathan Toews. You need two goals near the end of the game? I got it for you. You need two goals to start the game off, give us a 2-0 lead? Got you covered, right? And this one, let's give both teams credit about that none of the stars have been that X factor. And certainly, especially if Tampa, you know, being down now, you're going to need that. You're going to need that X factor.
They could use a two-goal game from Steve Stamkos. Now, as soon as this series ends, we're going to get into speculation about the future of both these hockey clubs. Series not over, but we're not on tomorrow, so we can talk about it today.
I'm on tomorrow.
We're not on tomorrow. Sorry, I'm doing something.
Jeez, wow. We refer to the show now as the People's Republic of Damien Cox.
Yeah.
Damien, you have the
floor. We got tomorrow off.
This is a segment Damien calls. Oh, look, there's my navel. Go ahead, Damien.
So, are the Tampa Bay Lightning going to be able to re-up Steve Stamkos long-term? And will the Chicago Blackhawks be able to return next year with a team that's able to challenge for the Cup?
Yes on the first question, no on the second question.
Okay.
Really?
He doesn't even have to elaborate because he's Jeff Merrick.
I think that Steve Yzerman has a contract sitting in his top right desk drawer.
Yeah.
Just waiting for July 1st to open it and say, now Steve, fill out the blank here.
I think it's going to be more complicated than that.
But why doesn't he wait a year and see what the cap is?
He very well could. Like, if you're Steven Stamkos, I don't know what the hurry is. I'm with you on that card.
But Chicago, we've all kind of agreed that Patrick Sharp is the sacrificial lamb contractually.
Mm-hmm. Even he thinks he is.
Well, I know, but they've been getting a lot of young guys in the lineup. I mean, they've done well, like a lot of second round picks there and that. I mean, yep. I know the new contracts kick in so with Kane and Taves, so cap wise is going to change it. But why do you think they won't be able to compete?
I don't think they'll be at the same team. I think they'll have the same depth. Right? I mean, Teravainen is going to be 1 year closer to becoming a restricted free agent. He'll need to get paid. You're going to make a sacrifice probably on the blue line as well.
Well, so that Brandon, means Brandon Saad has to get
Brandon paid. Saad is going That's to get paid one. Big time.
But I'll tell you, the one thing about the Chicago Blackhawks, more than maybe than any other team, they have benefited through those back diving contracts that got done with Hossa and Keith. They really benefit through those. The same kind of contract that the New Jersey Devils were punished for. mm-hmm. with Ilya Kovac. Not exactly the same, I understand, but very similar type.
It kind of felt arbitrary the way they
Chicago
cut it off
Blackhawks Kovalchuk. And they will continue to benefit.
The remnants of the old system, right?
The remnants of the old system, yeah, very much.
You do wonder, though, at what point, and maybe we're starting to see it now, although defensively he's still been phenomenal, at what point do you really start to say, wow, Hossa's slowing down?
Not yet. I don't see it. Yeah. I saw him beat Anton Stralman to an icing call the other night when it mattered late in that game.
I think it showed the year.
He does a lot of other things.
I know. And he's the classic example. But at some point, like when age catches up to those guys, it catches up to them fast.
But you were talking about years ago about, Ken Holland talk about we sell dreams, right? And Hossa would go there for less.
When did I say anything about that?
Just in general.
What are these things that you come up with?
No, you talked about. Well, I use the line all the
That's
time.
That's why we can't do a show together anymore.
Just what does Detroit sell? Is dreams to guys. And Hossa took less to go there, right? Yeah. Try to win it all. So now he's smart in that. You know, at this stage of your career, as Jerome Iginla say, his late years with the Calgary Flames, you want to be with a good team. Like, he's going to be a great player with this team. If he decides he's going to go with a rebuilding team, he ain't going to look as good, right? And so I think in this kind of environment in Chicago, you're going to see more of that that we're seeing now, him celebrating, him thriving.
Well, I think we're really going to see now how good a GM Stan Bowman is, and I think he's a darn good GM. But with the decisions and, some of the players that they've signed, Kyle Bond being one of them, the Russian kid whose name Panarin, I believe, and somebody, they've a Swedish player they're trying to bring in. They're trying to sign this Mike Riley kid. Some people think it's done. Some people think L.A. is still in it. So they're going to try to use those resources to bring in those kind of guys. But the reality is they are going to have to move some proven veterans and bring in some unproven players because they make a lot less money.
On that, we'll welcome in our first guest. He is the Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League, no stranger to this and other programs. Our friend Bill Daly joins us. Bill, how are you today, sir?
Guys, how are you today?
Good. A pleasure to have you on board. We're just spitballing here what happens next with Chicago if the Cup is presented tonight or Wednesday. What happens with Chicago? What happens with the Tampa Bay Lightning next? When you look at these two teams, Tampa and Chicago, Tampa's first kick at this since 2003 or 2004 rather, and Chicago poised to win three in the last six seasons, what comes to your mind first when you hear Chicago and Tampa?
Well, Chicago, from my perspective, is amazing at how competitive they've been, highly competitive for a prolonged period of time in a salary cap system, which, says a lot about their leadership, obviously says a lot about their core players, and their core players are basically the same that won them the Stanley Cup in 2010. And it says a lot about their general manager, who's able to surround those core players with really good players and players with champion pedigrees. It results in the kind of competitive success they've had to this point in time. On the Tampa side, I'm kind of amazed by how quickly Steve Yzerman has been able to build a team, a very young team that is as good as it is. If you look back, it was just 2011, and Steve had just started with the team when they went to the conference finals against Boston, went to seven games in that conference finals. And from that team, there's only two players left on the current roster. So it tells you what kind of overhaul they've been able to accomplish in a short period of time. And you watch that team in person, in particular in person, you see how good what a quality, skilled team that is. So I think that's going to be a good team for a long time. So they're two great teams. It's been a great final, and we're really happy from the league's perspective in terms of being able to have these two teams in the final.
I know you're not pulling for one team over the other, but is it important as a league teams like Chicago to show the salary cap system can work and you can have dynasties like, say, San Francisco Giants are in baseball?
I've never been a big dynasty guy, and, I grew up a huge sports fan and probably during the age of dynasties. And so I suppose from certain aspects that's cool. I guess from my perspective, I think one of the benefits of the system we have now is that it really does allow all the teams to be competitive on a regular basis, and obviously they have to be managed well, and they have to be coached well, and they have to make the right decisions player personnel wise. But everybody does have a chance to be competitive, and I think I think there's a lot to be said for the appeal of that for the fans in all 30 cities, that hope springs eternal, and if they put the right formula together, they have a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup. So, you know, it's great for Chicago. They've done a fantastic job. It's, you know, as we just said, you know, going for their third Stanley Cup in 6 years, but I'm not sure it's necessarily vital to kind of a long-term, you know, business perspective of the league.
A couple of competitive issues are going to – well, I know it's been talked about in great detail and continue to be, Bill, and the competition committee met a little while ago. But two issues. One, the cap, because we've talked about it here. Has it been decided where it's going to be and what the PA's position is? And second, three-on-three hockey for overtime next year. There seems to be – would I be wrong to say there's a bit of a stalemate? There's a bit of indecision as to – where the league and the players want to go on that issue?
I'll deal with them in the order in which you raised them. The cap is something that we've engaged with the Players Association on, and we've exchanged some information on. We have some ideas on. I don't anticipate there's going to be an issue. At least I'm certainly not led to believe that there's going to be any disagreement as between the parties. So we're pretty comfortable that the cap's going to come in basically where we've projected it for the clubs. So that's around, you know, the $71 million range. And then with respect to three-on-three overtime, I wouldn't call it a stalemate. I actually think we had a pretty good conversation at the competition committee meeting. Some good points were raised. I think there is, continues to be, the only really open issue, I think, at this point in time is whether we adopt the AHL rule from last year, where it's a 7-minute overtime, where we actually extend overtime by 2 minutes and go 3 minutes of 4-on-4 and 4 minutes of 3-on-3, or whether we go right to a 3-on-3. I think that issue will be decided relatively soon. Again, I don't think it was a contentious issue. I think both sides are in favor of all parties, I really should say, because I don't think of the competition committee in terms of it being sides, but I think all parties are in favor of some kind of change. A move to 3-on-3, the only open issue, and again, I wouldn't even call it contentious, is what form that takes.
You mentioned length of overtime, Bill, and I do wonder, because the league over the past however many years has really done, I think, a good job shortening the length of regular season game to a manageable number. In your mind, in the NHL's mind, is there a perfect length for a regular season game?
No, you know what? It's a great question. It's a fair question. And I would say, you know, I've been with the league for 18 and a half years now, and I've sat in those general managers. I think I've gone to every single general manager's meeting we've had during that time period. And I think over that time, I think there's been different views with respect to how long a game should be. And you know, we went through a phase where, you know, we were very concerned about how long games were, and you know, we instituted hurry-up face-off procedures. I think we've kind of eased that, and we've moved into a phase where we're pretty comfortable with kind of the length of our games. I don't think we get a, you know, I don't think we have any, and we do fan research all the time, we don't have any strong sentiment that our game is either too long or too short. So I think we're in a pretty good place right now. You know, there certainly is a concern that you know, if you go to a 7-minute overtime, that potentially that could move in the direction of having games that last too long. But, you know, I can't say that was an overriding sentiment either.
Bill, the Arizona situation, I know Gary Bettman spoke with Scott Oak that night and just basically threw it back that I'd be concerned if I'm the voters in Glendale about the city council, that as far as he was concerned, a deal is a deal. I'm curious the last couple of days and your thoughts about it, and the worries that a fan base that thought there was stability now, the perception they may get jilted again.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a difficult situation. There's no doubt. You know, I think there's, you know, a high degree of disappointment with respect to how the city of Glendale and the city officials in Glendale have handled this entire situation. It was kind of a surprise attack by all accounts, you know, putting it on a city council agenda the night before the city council meeting and then actually voting to terminate at least it's legal and binding. It's unfortunate because I think, you know, Glendale has tried to step up and be a big league city, with the sports facilities there, both for the Cardinals in football and for the Coyotes in hockey. And unfortunately, right now, it seems like they're kind of led by Bush League leadership, and that's unfortunate.
When you look at the future of that team, there were some eyebrows raised last week, or that Andrew Barraway wasn't very much front and center last week when all this stuff was going on. Was that just a coincidence, or is his future with the team uncertain, as there have been rumors about?
Yeah, no, I don't view Andy's role with the team to be uncertain at this point in time. I mean, I think part of the reason he wasn't there front and center was part of what I alluded to, which is the fact that this was noticed on an agenda the night before a council meeting, which didn't leave a lot of notice for anybody. So it was pretty much a scramble. And obviously, we're pleased kind of the judge came out initially where she came out, and we'll kind of see how that unfolds. But I do buy into a concern, of the fan base there, and that's the last thing I think this franchise needed at this point is any more instability or uncertainty, and it's difficult, and you got to feel for them and for the business partners who have to kind of put up with this again.
Given that, to that point, Bill, there is this newfound, here we are, another round of uncertainty with the Arizona Coyotes, with the future very much in question. Would there be a contingency plan that the NHL/Arizona Coyotes either already have in place, would be looking to put together? Damian and I just 2 weeks ago were in Quebec City for the Memorial Cup, where they, as you well know, have a brand new shiny arena.
Oh, yes,
arena.
They do have a brand new
shiny arena. Yeah, a brand new shiny arena. Any contingencies for, perhaps if the Arizona Coyotes no longer exist in Glendale?
Well, I don't think there are any short-term contingencies at all. I mean, the team is going to be in the Valley next year, and I would hope for many years to come, and I think the ownership wants to be there. Whether that means they're in Glendale and they're in that arena, I guess we'll see. But there's no short-term contingencies for that team playing anywhere else other than where they're currently playing. And I guess that's where I'll leave it.
And on that, we'll leave as well. Bill, thanks, as always, for stopping by. Enjoy Game 6 tonight.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League. The Arizona situation, the Barraway situation was an interesting one, why he wasn't front and center. Some reports that it was a previous family vacation, was not able to be there. But I talked to someone in Arizona, when this was all happening. And, of course, more questions and answers. And, I don't know how you sell season tickets now with all this uncertainty. Once again, we kept saying for however many years, really give Arizona a shot, really give it a chance. There was, for years and years, drama involving who's going to own the team. You have Jim Balsley trying to go back door. All of a sudden, you have characters like Redfield T-Bomb entering the equation. Mm-hmm. It really became a circus. And you say to yourself, at what point do you just let this thing settle in and see if it can take root? And the only way, in a lot of ways, for these markets to take root is for hockey at the minor league level to take a grip, to have some flypaper to it. So, and Damon, you've written extensively about Austin Matthews. He's a Phoenix kid. Is he going to go to Everett? Is he going to go to Europe? Will he be the first overall draft pick next year? We don't know. But now we're starting to see the minor hockey program produce some results. And you would think that would be the beginning of some traction?
Maybe. I mean, attendance was down in Arizona this year.
Bad team.
And the challenge they're going to have is they may likely be a bad team for a few years. So that means we're unlikely to see a spike in attendance. So they're going to, even if they can resolve all this with city council, we're going to see a team that's going to limp along with attendance in the 11,000, 12,000 range for the foreseeable future. And even if this, what you talk about, the minor hockey organization is growing, yes, it is growing, but does that translate into people going to games? I mean, I used to go to the Phoenix Coyotes games when they were in Scottsdale. There were a lot more people there then than there are now. So this thing has, for a long time, has not been curving upwards. The league still believes in it.
Well, you know, it's interesting when he, you know, he's got to be tired of it. And to call them Bush League, I thought was kind of like, because before, you're right, the league really believed in, and they never wavered. They were going to find a way to make it work. But I think involving the city of Glendale, too, that everybody was on deck. And now, as they got to be thinking, they try to control hirings and that in Stanley Cup games. You don't want to usurp or one-up the playoff games, and you try to do them on off days and things like that. And like you said, this was like full throttle.
It's a crazy scenario. You've got a city of, or town, city or whatever you want to call it, 200,000 people.
Yep. Yeah.
Home to an NHL team.
Tell you, man, that movie Field of Dreams ruined a lot of sports organizations with this idea that if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Kevin Costner, shame on you. You ruined a lot of good sports markets across North America. We take a break. We're going to come back with Paul Bissonnette of the Calder Cup champion Manchester Monarchs, and we'll take a little bit of time with Damien's mock draft. So warm that one up, Damo Spin. Back in moments on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network simulcast stateside on the NHL Network.
Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard alongside Gord Stellick and Damian Cox, who's writing something down furiously, knowing that we just teed up that we're going to be going over his mock draft, which we saw on Saturday. Now he signed off on it. Very good. The pen has returned to the host. Yes,
how can you be in for Darren Millard when he's not scheduled to be in again?
Actually, technically, I'm in for Brad Fay, who's in for Leah Hextall, who's in for Darren Millard.
Okay.
So that's the way.
Well, welcome to the show.
Wow, you are way down in the bullpen, aren't you? You are a mop up, man.
I am like in the
bleep. The score is 18-1 against us. Yeah. You're just stay out there as long as you can stay there.
Just keep pitching. We don't want to ruin anyone. We don't want to ruin anyone with a real arm. Thank you very much. You just stay in there, kid. Mock draft saw it on Saturday on Hockey Night in Canada. You and George going through it. Who are the
you were concerned we went too slowly, right?
No, I was concerned you went too quickly. I'm like, oh, I'll grab the popcorn. I'm going to settle in. I'm going to put my feet up, put something red into a glass, and watch Damian pontificate about the prospects. Who are the wild? Because we know 1 and 2. That's an obvious one. You could even make the argument that number 3 is not exactly a secret. I don't know how the Arizona Coyotes turned down a 6-3 center in the Western Conference. But if the whole thing starts at, some say 3, I would say 4. Who are the wild cards for you, Damian? Who are the names you should keep in the back of your mind here?
Well, I mean, I started number 4, you know, because who the Maple Leafs decide to take at 4 starts to change what direction the draft goes in. You know, I suggested the other night they'll go with Brandon defenseman Ivan Provorov. They may not. This is a huge guessing game for everybody right now. If they go Provorov, the draft turns one way. If they go Mitch Marner, the draft turns another way. But I think most people agree who the top 11 players are. So then at 12, it starts to take another turn. And right at around when the Edmonton Oilers get their second round or their second pick of the first round at number 16, and there's a goaltender out of Russia who just signed a 3-year contract, are they going to finally draft a goaltender and try to develop him? And, you know, nobody seems to be taking goalies in the first round. So then, again, if they do that, the draft takes another turn. So I would say, you know, what the Leafs do at 4, what the Oilers do at 16, mm-hmm. and then once you get into the latter half of the draft, I would say what happens with two guys in particular, the Russian winger Denis Gurianov, and then with Daniel Sprong of the Charlottetown Islanders, where does he fit in? So I really think it's going to be a terrific, terrific draft because as much as everybody, I mean, I love the tweets you get. This isn't going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. Anybody who tells you what's going to happen in the draft after 2, they're lying to you.
We do know one thing as we turn the page on the draft and we'll get back to it in a couple of seconds. We do know that Paul Bissonnette is a champion, ladies and gentlemen, Calder Cup champion with the Manchester Monarchs. Biz Nasty joins us now. Paul, first of all, congratulations and how did it feel on the weekend?
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, it was pretty pretty special moment. Luckily, it was in Utica, so my folks could come down. And, all in all, just a really good way to end the season.
You know, being a developmental league at one point, so you play on the way up, and then being a veteran, how is it different in every way now than the enjoyment factor as well, getting a Calder Cup at this stage in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, a borderline NHLer for 5 years, and, you know, I was fortunate enough to play there. And, I mean, coming down, I guess, you know, you can look at it two ways. You know, guys did not take it seriously and kind of, you know, look down upon it. But I was pretty excited to, you know, come down and, I guess, you know, play a little bit more, develop my game. And I was fortunate enough to be able to jump on with Manchester. And, I mean, as far as the prospects and talent goes, they were pretty loaded. And, yeah, it was fun every day coming to the rink and watching these young guys, you know, excel and get better. And, you know, I embraced it, and it was great.
You know, it's funny, Paul. We see players like yourself get to professional hockey, play in the National Hockey League, and we sometimes assume it's just been one championship at every level on the way, you know, winning, 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 winning. When was the last time you were on a championship team before this?
I was actually talking about that today on TSN radio. I won a world championship under 18 with guys like Ryan Getzlaf. I was part of that 03 draft.
Okay.
So I was really lucky to play with some pretty good players. Corey Perry was on the team. I think Braden Colburn, Seabrook. I mean, if you look up the guys, it was insane. I mean, the first round of that year, I think everyone went on to pretty much be like an all-star in the NHL. And, yeah, so that was the last time I'd won. And, I mean, the last team that I came close with was Phoenix the year before the lockout, the last lockout when we went to the conference finals against L.A. So, yeah, these don't come easy. And, you know, like I said, I know it's not the Stanley Cup, but this is a pretty special moment in my career.
You know, Mike Stuthers, your head coach, it's interesting. It's from a couple of generations before you played, but, you know, he was a big tough, nasty blue liner. You know, I can't help but thinking that you must have got along pretty well with Mike Stuthers.
Yeah, I actually played junior with him in Owen Sound, and it's when I actually was done with my PTO mm-hmm. in Portland. I actually reached out to Feuda and him because they both were with me in Owen Sound. They traded for me when I was in Saginaw, and I was like, listen, my PTO is over. I'd love to try to come in and help and, you know, protect your young guys and your assets. And I was fortunate that Dean okayed it as long as I stayed off Twitter. And it all worked out.
You know, this is where we get into the 6 degrees of separation games. You got Paul Bissonnette
yep.
to Mike Stuthers
yep.
to Gord Stellick. Because I believe, Mr. Stellick, did you not trade at one time for Mike Stuthers?
Yeah, did, actually.
What?
Yeah, back in 88, 89. He wasn't from Belleville, though, which kind of threw us off. But, got, you know, it actually was a good kind of trade that we lost defenseman and Leafs through injury and made a trade for, like, I don't know, a draft pick for Stuthers, and he played okay. And the end of the year, Bob Clark called and said, how about we take Mike Stuthers back and you take Bill Root back so they can play in their American League teams?
He told me that story.
Yeah.
Was that Toronto and Philly?
Toronto, Philly. Yeah. It was a blight. I'm sure you all remember where you were the day of the Mike Stuthers trade between Toronto and Philly. I don't know why you're playing dumb.
Well, I think it's Paul's dream is to one day be traded by Gord Stellick, I would imagine.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, he coached Owen Sound, too, Bobby Ryan and all that.
Well, he was out in Moose Jaw.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Patrick, actually, we played against Bob Sanguinetti in the finals. He's with Vancouver's farm team in Utica. Mm-hmm. He was on our team. We had Brad Richardson, who's in Vancouver as well. Patrick Jarrett, he was a good player. Oh, Andre Shakira was there.
He had a
pretty stacked team, too.
So, I mean, is your hope, Paul, that through this will leapfrog you back into the NHL? Or what does this do for you? Obviously, this is a team thing, but for you individually? Yeah.
I mean, I don't think a one way would come of it. I mean, I have no problem, like I said, going back to the American League and keep playing. You know, I still have a lot of passion for the game. I understand the NHL is kind of headed in a different direction, and, you know, it's kind of guys like me are kind of dinosaurs, but, you know, the work ethic's there. So I'll just, like I said, keep trying to develop my game. And hey, maybe be an up-and-down guy if, you know, they need someone on the fourth line and fill water bottles, and I'll be glad to do it.
You know, I know a lot of guys playing in the American League or Central League way back when, at the end of their career, is a good way to get into coaching. I mean, you develop a rep, you start working with younger players, all that. Is that of interest to you?
Yeah, I find that, you know, bench warmers kind of have the advantage, too, because we spend so much time watching and seeing how those things go. And I know it sounds crazy, but it seems like a lot of the, you know, the plugs are the ones who end up being good coaches, because I think that, you know, when you deal with, like, good players, I mean, I could use the Wayne Gretzky example where, they would have 5-on-3s. We tell stories in Phoenix about when Gretzky was closer. They would have 5-on-3s, and there wasn't necessarily like a way he would explain what he want did. He just, when they didn't score on it, he was like, how do you guys not score with two more guys on the ice than that? He would just go behind the net when he was in Edmonton, and, you know, Sauce went over a guy's stick and it'd be in the back of the net. So, you know, a guy like Dan Bylsma, who was my coach in Wilkes-Barre, like he was another guy who was like a fourth liner, grinder, penalty killer, where, you know, he understands how to get it done, as opposed to just like going out there and doing it. So we'll see. I don't know about maybe coaching down the road, but for now I'll keep playing.
You know, we have the draft coming up in under 2 weeks, broadcast now on Sportsnet. And Paul, go take us back to 2003 when you get selected by the Pittsburgh Penguins. What was your draft day story, Paul?
Okay, well, I was supposed to go on the first day, which was three rounds back then. I don't know if they still do it that way. It's
first round, first day.
And I didn't end up getting drafted. It was in Nashville. Oh. And luckily, for whatever reason, I brought in two suits. So the first day, I had my brand new suit that my grandparents had bought me. And I didn't end up getting drafted, but we still went out for dinner. And I went and partied with a bunch of my buddies who had been drafted. And I ended up staying over in another girl's room. We won't go into details there. But I get back to my room the next day because I had to go back to the draft the next morning for the fourth and remaining rounds, and my suit was missing and my hair was everywhere, so I ended up having to wear like a who shot the couch kind of suit to the draft. And I ended up going the fourth round of the Penguins, and I came down and I think they were like, oh geez, did we make a mistake? My hair was like an afro, and I looked like crap. So that's pretty much the only, you know, draft story I have for you.
That's pretty good. But should we ask where the suit ended up?
No idea. Okay. I don't know if the maid took it, but I don't know. It definitely didn't walk up and leave. So
it'll probably show up on eBay one of these days.
That's right.
Dan Fritchie, because we had the same agent, we all roomed together.
Oh, yeah.
And he was my roommate. And I don't know if he accidentally threw it in his bag, because he went first day and then he took off the next day. So maybe he accidentally packed it. But
that's right. Back took him. So it's either in Columbus or when he went back to Sarnia.
Yeah.
Paul, thanks so much. And congratulations, Calder Cup champion Paul Bissonnette. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
There he is, Biz Nasty, the one and only Paul Bissonnette. Manchester Monarchs over the Utica Comets in five games. John Cooper, by the way, folks, describing Nikita Kucherov as probable for a game six.
I thought you were going to say as a nice young man. No, as probable.
Is he going to play goal or outside? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. If he can avoid playing bumper cars with Victor Hedman, right, then you might want to dress him in net. So Kucherov is probable. That's from Darren Millard on Twitter. We thank Darren for the updates. Picking up on
should
some
be doing something down there. Him and Shannon.
Him and Shannon, like,
what are
they living
doing?
It, hey?
He's the host of the show, isn't he?
Nice deal. nice deal for Darren and Johnny. Picking up on the draft story you mentioned before with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Edmonton, three scenarios for me come to mind. One, yours with the goaltender. Two, a defenseman, whether you look at Thomas Chabot, if he's available, Jacob Zboril, mm-hmm. one of these, and then with Jules.
They will. They'll be there.
Or they just trade it.
Yeah. I mean, Peter Chiarelli has an interesting, a number of interesting choices, and he has a bunch of assets, including these two picks in the top 16. And you've got to believe the expectation in Edmonton with Connor McDavid coming in is that this is going to be a playoff team next year. In that light.
Oh, who's playing net?
Well, I think that's what you got to think about doing.
Just keep the puck in the offensive zone.
Oh, that's
yeah.
It. That's defense,
and so
offense.
I think Peter Chiarelli's got to be thinking, okay, some of these assets, whether it's a first-round pick, whether it's Leon Draisaitl, who we just saw in the Memorial Cup, move some of them for guys who can help you, not for 30-year-old guys, but for guys who can help you be a more competitive team now. And I'll tell you, you know, you look around the NHL, the one thing is you say, who's playing goal? You look at what's going on with Kerry Lehtinen in Dallas. What's his future there? What's the future of Jimmy Howard in Detroit? I know they say they're going to go with both of them. Yeah. Those are big contracts to take. The Edmonton owners, if they want to get inventive, they can come up with a goalie.
My quick one is Arizona, third overall. I wonder if they're advertising against their shopping.
They'll pass.
given what's gone on, especially if that's they're talking about taking Stroman, I wonder if they're advertising it to move down or whatever.
But I guess the question, what are you going to get to move down to what? To third or fourth or fifth?
Money for their lease.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
If you really want Hanifin, you advertise you want Stroman, you move down one.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then Hanifin's sitting there at four for you.
Yep.
All right, so we sorted game. That out.
There we go.
All right, okay. Good show,
Gordon
boys.
Agrees with you.
Wow, we got...
This is the Double Dare mock draft.
We did something.
So when does the second hour begin? That's it?
No, that's it. Damien.
Gordon and I used to do 4 hours without commercials.
Without Millar.
Well, you robbed the bank. You didn't have to wear a mask. Enjoy.